Resilience is long-term development. It's my ability to withstand the shock of that event. People don't have bank balances. A lot of their stocks, a lot of their wealth is in perishable stocks, food items, for instance. And the difference between the family that has a bank balance and does not have a bank balance is very stark. So I think we have to go back to basics of development and remove this aura around disasters as being something very different.
All these things are related to the governance also and the social system also, and that become politics. We can go through the problem only by thinking about the changing of our system also. It should be a people-centered system. We should equip the people to tackle the problem, because the people are responsible to act on these kind of disasters.
You're listening to On the Contrary by IDR, a show featuring unlikely conversations on topics that affect our future. Hear differing perspectives from leaders and experts as they help us make sense of the most pressing issues of our time. On today's episode, I'm talking to KK Shailaja and Libby Johnson. KK Shailaja is an Indian politician and the former health minister of Kerala. She's received national and global recognition for her leadership and handling of the Nipah virus outbreak in Kerala, as well as the COVID-19 pandemic. And before entering active politics, she was a high school physics teacher, which is why she's also affectionately referred to as Shailaja Teacher by many people. Libby is the executive director of the nonprofit Gram Vikas, based in Odisha. He has more than 25 years of experience in grassroots and policy work, and he has a ton of experience when it comes to disaster management. He coordinated Gram Vikas's relief, rehabilitation, and reconstruction activities after the 1999 Odisha supercyclone, as well as after the Indian Ocean tsunami. And he's been closely involved with pandemic relief efforts in the state. Now, we know that in the future, we will experience more pandemics in our lifetimes. We're already seeing this with extreme weather events thanks to climate change, unseasonal cyclones, monsoons, heat waves, landslides. The frequency, intensity, and scale of these is only going to increase. And so resilience becomes extremely important, especially when it comes to vulnerable populations who tend to bear the brunt of many of these disasters most acutely. We need well-functioning social security systems. Local governance needs to be strong. People need to have access to basic services and entitlements. With COVID-19 especially, there's been a lot of talk about building back better. But if we continue to face recurring disasters and the interval between those disasters continues to reduce, the question becomes, can we build back better? And what does that really mean? Ultimately, isn't a conversation about disaster management really just a conversation about inclusive development? Shailaja Teacher, Libby, the two states where you work, Kerala and Odisha, have both had a long history of dealing with disaster. And so both have very sophisticated mechanisms of disaster preparedness and early warning systems. But both states are also at very different stages of development. I'd like us to have a conversation about what resilience means in both of your contexts and what lessons the pandemic has taught us that we can take forward as we plan for the future. So to start with you, Libby, can you tell us a little bit about the socioeconomic and demographic context of Odisha? Were there pre-existing factors that either aided or hampered pandemic relief efforts in the state?
Odisha is a child of disaster, and you know, natural disasters have been affecting the state now for many years. And in the last 5 years or so, we've had annual disaster events, cyclones or floods, recurring on a unprecedented scale. And the last 2 years, of course, we've had the COVID pandemic. But in the middle of that, in 2021, the cyclone coming and hitting us in the northeastern coast of Odisha. So we've had to really struggle in the last couple of years. The government of Odisha has really put in place some serious, strong early warning system. And one of the advantages of that is that cyclone kind of disasters, we don't lose life anymore. And compared to what we saw in the 1999 super cyclone, that's huge progress that we've achieved. Having said that, you know, 40% of Odisha is either scheduled caste or scheduled tribe communities. About 2/3 of the geography of Odisha is hills or lands, large amount of forest cover. the coastal part of Odisha, which is the remaining third, have high density of population and varied occupational profile. About one third of Odisha's GSDP comes from industries, and that's largely mining and mineral processing industries, which means that there's a lot of ongoing impact on natural resources, on forests, on water that we see on a daily basis. Five large river basins, annual floods. Compared to that, one of the lowest rates of urbanization in India. So you were talking about an economy that is very, very rural, agrarian, but agriculture, which is only contributing 15 or 16% of the gross state product, which means huge amount of migration. Now, I think all these factors together contribute to increasing Odisha's vulnerability when it comes to an event like COVID-19. And during the first wave, when migrants returning made a lot of news across India, Odisha faced problems because of the large number of workers who returned from Surat, from Bombay, from Pune, bringing in infections in substantial numbers, and the state being not really prepared because we don't have healthcare facilities at the lowest end. The state did try to respond by making panchayats more responsible, etc. But the panchayat raj system in Odisha is in its infancy, and its ability to kind of react rapidly of a high quality is still limited. So you have all these factors, natural, demographic, and socioeconomic, that makes Odisha at the receiving end of some of these difficult times.
Shailaja teacher, I'd like to ask you the same question. If you could talk about the local context in Kerala, and specifically any pre-existing conditions that you feel helped with pandemic relief efforts, as well as perhaps those that didn't.
I think Kerala is facing the same situation as Odisha, and our state is also vulnerable for these floods and hurricanes, etc. are here. And the terrain is also like that. The landscape is hilly areas and forests, etc. We also had faced two devastating floods in 2018 and 2019. And also hurricane like Oki. Pandemic SARS also coming, Nipah virus attack, and also the COVID-19. And we are trying our best to tackle these kind of problems in Kerala also. During this pandemic season, we faced too much difficulties because the COVID-19 pandemic carrier people are going from urban to rural and rural to urban, and the transmission become all of a sudden. And that is a great threat to us during that season. Socioeconomic things, we can say that is comparatively positive for Kerala because the human development index is high in Kerala. Because of the social reforms like the Land Reform Act and also the Daughter Literacy Mission and decentralized people's planning, etc., we can reduce the poverty. Poverty alleviation process is very good in Kerala. We got very good result out of that. Because of that work, we had achieved a very good socioeconomic status, the Human Development Index, etc. But the demographic, that is not so good. Our population density is too much in Kerala. That is 860 out of this 1 square kilometer. And our national average is 437 or like that. And that population density also became a great threat during the pandemic season. And also the old age population, we can say it is a positive thing because our life expectancy increased because of the healthcare work. Our life expectancy is very much near to the high income countries. That is 74 to 76 years. But during the pandemic season, it also became a great threat. We have to save all this old age population from the contagious virus. And that became a difficulty in Kerala also. We have so many achievements at the same time. We have some drawbacks also. That is the lifestyle diseases. Lifestyle diseases are rampant in Kerala. Hypertension, diabetes, cancer, everything is here. And during this pandemic season, we are also worried about these kind of NCDs also. We tried our best to tackle this problem by the people's participation. Every time we are using the decentralized method and people's planning, etc., and we are implementing that things to tackle this kind of difficulties also. Same as Odisha, we have hilly areas. We have no mining like in Odisha, but we have so many laterite quarries and the blackstone quarries that become a dangerous thing during the flood season in Kerala also.
I think, like both of you said, you know, both states have in the last even just 5 years faced year-on-year consecutive disasters. And as we face each of these disasters, it kind of underlines the need for better disaster resilience. And in order for that to happen, what to your mind, Shalija teacher, should the government focus on and how we can equip communities better to absorb the shocks of the disaster? And why do we think perhaps we're not faring as well as we could be?
Disasters will come each and every time. We cannot stop it completely. The first part is we should train them to face any kind of difficulties. In Kerala, we are giving training to volunteers to face this kind of calamities. During the floods, thousands of youths, they got training and they actively participated in saving people, etc. And then another thing is they should have to build houses or they should have to move proper places before the calamities. And we should have some permanent shelters or permanent places to protect the people during this kind of floods and hurricanes. For the pandemic or the diseases, we should train people to have early detection of the diseases. Even in the primary sector, we are improving our hospitals with laboratories to find out pandemics earlier. We are examining all the ILI, SARI cases, influenza-like illness, and also the COPD, etc. We build very good laboratories in primary health center itself. Then people can check whether it is a severe disease or not. And they can check the non-communicable diseases also, the blood pressure or sugar, etc. They can find out. And if we keep normal on these things, these hypertension and diabetes, if you can put it normal, the attack of the severe diseases we can tackle at that time. And we are making all the people aware about this kind of pandemics and diseases, and they can save themselves. Our health is our responsibility. We raised a slogan in the society that my health is my responsibility, and each and everyone should keep a bubble around them to not get the communicable diseases and also to give the communicable diseases to others, to stop the transmission. And we are teaching people how to live with the pandemic or with the infectious diseases. We are trying to equip the people, and that is the only way to escape or come out of this difficult situation.
You know, you spoke a lot about community awareness and training people, and I think one of the many really great things about the way Kerala responded to the pandemic was really relying on that and on a history of strong local self-government, strong community mobilization. I wanted to actually ask you, Libby, in Odisha, when it comes to disaster resilience, what do you think in terms of where the government needs to focus in a way that creates a base level of resilience, if you will, that enables people to respond better to shocks? And what are your thoughts on how the state is currently faring?
As a people here in Odisha, we have a certain amount of fatalism connected to this. And a lot of our responses are also designed around that slightly fatalist way of this is how things are to be. That is not a very good thing for the state. When people tend to get a little fatalist about it, there's limits to which a state can actually create systems or imaginatively come up. Now, one has to accept that. But having said that, what did Odisha learn from the 99 super cyclone is about how to prevent loss of life, like I said earlier. And that we've done very well. And we've not had in double digits deaths in any of these disasters in the last 7 years. While that is remarkable, what we also see is response to a disaster is still very ad hoc and knee-jerk. A lot of preparatory work happens, early warning systems go, there are multiple cyclone shelters that people are moved to. But soon after, you take out the NDRF going for immediate rescue and relief, in a kind of clearing the path and putting electricity back in order. Everything else is whether it is immediate food relief, whether it is about shelter support, there's a lot of ad hocism and knee-jerk effort that continues to be there, and that is very surprising. despite of all the experiences. And we still believe in the techno-managerial solution to all these problems. And I think there is a huge limit to managerial technical solutions because we are not putting citizens in the center of it. There is still a problem to be solved. And like I said, citizens are quite fatalistic about why the problem happened and what they could have done to prevent it. So the state also becomes kind of very prescriptive and normative. So what is resilience? Resilience is basically, like you said, it's long-term development. It's my ability to withstand the shock of that event. People don't have bank balances. A lot of their stocks, a lot of their wealth is in perishable stocks, food items, for instance. And the difference between the family that has a bank balance and does not have a bank balance is very stark. So I think we have to go back to basics of development and remove this aura around disasters as being something very different. And what teacher mentioned about how Kerala has been doing it, and you see that in action at the panchayat level. There is a need to take it step by step and look at overall well-being as the issue and resilience as one of the features of overall well-being of citizens. I think that is how we will need to approach it rather than reacting or responding to an immediate disaster situation.
You're listening to On the Contrary by IDR. We'll be right back after this break. The world is deeply interconnected, and so are the issues we're currently facing. From healthcare and economic crises to the climate emergency, none of these challenges can be tackled in isolation. People and organizations need to work together across economic, ecological, and social development issues. India Foundation for Humanistic Development, or IFHD, is a nonprofit that has been doing just that. Since 2011, they have been working across India on poverty alleviation in the face of climate change and its impact on people. With a committed team of technical experts, field staff, and community members, IFHD has been working across women empowerment, micro-enterprise development, and biodiversity conservation. They also focus on improving risk resilience of farming families and ensuring food and nutrition security across rural India. Their Pro Rasa program is currently helping 5,000 farmers in Karnataka revive a traditional farming practice called Akadi Salu. Akadi Salu involves growing multiple crops simultaneously and naturally on soil that is untouched by chemical fertilizers and pesticides. This program has helped reduce costs of farming and provided multiple income streams to farmers. It has also helped conserve water, enhance the quality and quantity of crops, trees, and livestock, and has contributed to the revival of local village economies in the region. To learn more about IFHD's work, follow them on LinkedIn at India Foundation for Humanistic Development, IFHD, or visit www.ifhd.in. And now, back to the show.
I want to go back to something you said at the start of your response, where you said that when a disaster happens, you know, while there are systems in place, it can get quite ad hoc at the point of relief efforts, right? And you said this thing about putting the onus in a sense on the government, but we need to sort of rethink that and look at citizens being at the center. So what might that look like? Could you elaborate on that?
You know, looking at as a citizen, how I have been dealt with by my government, I get this strong sense of being a class 2 child having done something wrong and the state being the headmaster. There is this constant sense of worry, fear of the state. State and citizen have to be two adults dealing with each other. That is not the case that is happening. It is probably a parent-child relationship between the state and the citizen. This I am speaking very specifically of Odisha. What is the level of trust that a citizen has on her state? And the state manifested either as a panchayat sarpanch or the district collector or the chief minister of the state, doesn't matter, whichever way it is manifested. What is the level of trust you have? In Odisha's case, I think large number of Odias have great faith in our chief minister to do right. And he has proven that repeatedly that he will do right by his people. But you don't get that sense when it comes to the district where the district collector is all in all. And increasingly at the panchayat level, where the sarpanch may want to do a lot of things, but then her hands are tied because a lot of bureaucratic, you know, the kind of decentralization that's happened in Kerala has not happened in Odisha. So the citizen wants to believe the best that the state will do for her, but the circumstances do not prove that. So there is definitely an issue of trust in the state. And will it happen, Suamoto? I don't know. I don't think the state can create trust in itself. It will be a series of steps. And this policing per se, which is what has happened in the context of COVID particularly, I don't think is helping that. So how do we put the citizen in the center, but at the same time deal with the citizen as an adult and the state behaving like an adult and not behaving like a parent going after a mischievous child?
Shalja, teacher, you know, with the effects of climate change increasing year on year, and we're also seeing growing income inequality around the world as well as in India, each disaster is going to wreak more havoc than its predecessor. And there's also an element of the unknown with future disasters, very much like in the way we saw in the pandemic. Despite all of the disaster preparedness, there was enough that was unpredictable that set many, you know, many states, many governments back. So with Kerala's experience of dealing with the pandemic, what are some of the lessons that we can draw from it? And how do we use those lessons to plan for what is unknown with future disasters?
All these things are related to the governance also, and the social system also, and that become politics. And we can go through the problem only by thinking about the changing of our system also. It should be a people-centered system. We should equip the people to tackle the problem, because the people are responsible to act on this kind of disasters and all things. But people should be equipped for that. We should supply opportunities to the people. We should have a perfect democracy. The democracy means perfect opportunity or equality in opportunity. And we should give opportunity for the poor people to come up to tackle this kind of problems. We are thinking about them whenever some incidents occur. That is not sufficient. We should think about them properly. We should have to work hard to equip the people and also equip the system to tackle any difficulties. That is the most important thing. How can we build something for the people? To build back better means not reproduce after the flood or after the disasters, not reproduce the same thing again. It means build back better. It means to build back the things to face these kind of difficulties, that we should have to apply the proper technology also. There are so many technologies, but we are not applying these technologies to face this problem. And we have to improve our young scientists or young technical peoples to come forward and find some solutions. There are so many startups and so many inventions. And there are so many innovations to find solutions to tackle floods or these diseases, etc. And that way also, we should work hard to find some solutions to tackle this kind of problems.
Libby, what are your lessons from the pandemic and relief efforts in Odisha? And how do we plan for what we don't know is coming?
I can think of 5 points where we possibly can act. And I go back to my pet peeve, citizens have to be at the center of this. It cannot be the government, it cannot be the bureaucracy at the center, it has to be citizen. And let's not forget that the state is only as strong as its weakest citizen. What applies in blockchains apply to daily political economic life in the state as well. Second is, of course, decentralize further. And we have remarkable examples of Kerala, of Karnataka, of West Bengal, of having managed local level issues much better because the subsidiarity principle of institutional design and decision making has been followed. So what a panchayat can decide for, let the panchayat decide. There's no need for the collector to do that. Decentralize and let people control. And we are now celebrating the Sula Jubilee of the decentralized planning campaign in Kerala. And if you look at the Big Bang approach they did in 1996 of giving so much money down to the panchayats, and a lot of people calling it money wasted in a drain, but that is not what happened. So you have to have trust in your people and that adult-to-adult relationship that I was referring to. The third point is about technology. We need to bring in technology, but then a lot of the new technology interventions that are coming are way beyond average citizens' reach. They need to be demystified. They need to be brought down. Something like a weather forecast. How do you make weather forecast relevant for the farmer, for her small plot? What we get is block level or district level forecast, which to the small farmer doesn't make a difference because it's not meaningful. How do we make technology demystify it so that the last person can use it? The fourth point, which I'm quite glad that teacher also mentioned, is about reversing what we are doing in the public health system today, particularly in Odisha, where the focus is on building tertiary specialized care. We are neglecting primary health, and whether it is a natural disaster or a pandemic or, you know, simple things like malaria, which has now come back to forests, we cannot leave it to just the ASHAs and the ANMs. And there seems to be so much faith in women that we have put that ASHA Didi or an ANM Didi will be able to solve primary health issues. Primary health focus has to be brought back. Much better strengthening has to happen. And the last point is about partnerships. And the moment we talk about partnerships today, particularly in the state sector, there is an immediate reductive kind of efficiency-centric PPP. So partnership is not PPP. Partnership is about people in the middle, and partnership is about improving the last mile of delivery and making sure that no one is left behind. Because building back better is no use if the weaker citizen is left behind.
I'm really glad that you mentioned partnerships, because what you've been talking about specifically with the very skewed relationship between the state and the citizen. Of course, there is a role for the state to change the way it engages with the citizen. But I was curious to know what your thoughts are on what is the role of citizens at times like this. And also, since you are from the nonprofit and the civil society sector, you talk a little bit about the role of the nonprofit sector, I guess, both in sort of long-term development, but also in the context of relief efforts and disaster and recovery.
There were times in Odisha when NGOs were probably the strongest delivery agents of, you know, last mile social welfare delivery, including disaster relief or rehabilitation and reconstruction. Because, I mean, I remember in 99, Gram Vikas, the organization that I work with, we worked on rehabilitation and reconstruction for 4 years after the 99 cyclone, putting things back. State had a very minimal role. That's not the case in 2013 after Cyclone Phailin. Gram Vikas played second fiddle to the government as kind of a socio-technical partner, with the state, the government taking the main role in reconstruction. But 2018 Cyclone Titli, 2019 Cyclone Fani, we are not required as a technology or a social partner because the state seems to believe that it can do on its own. Habitat planning has gone completely out of the window because state is now in providing individual households financial assistance to build houses, and people are making suboptimal choices when it comes to habitat planning. And that we are seeing across Odisha, where individual houses are being built better, but the habitat is not any better than it was before the disaster. So there is need for specific skills and technology orientation that nonprofits or civil society organizations bring there, particularly in the context of Odisha. And the Odisha state also needs organizations to strengthen the panchayat, because strengthening panchayats cannot happen by giving more powers to the sarpanch. Strengthening panchayats happens when the citizen panchayat's interface is strengthened. Now, given the remote, you know, large spread remote locations, the wide variety in how people's educational achievements are, you know, you need catalysts, you need facilitating organizations to do that. And we do not have, unfortunately, a history of people's movements like the literacy mission or the social reform movements, which Kerala and other states have had. So one has to go back to existing civil society organizations to do that. And that is the nature of partnership we need to bring in, looking at how things can be better, more resilient, and communities can be made more resilient to climate change and all that is happening around us today.
Before I ask, teacher, the same question, could you, in a few lines, just explain what you mean when you say habitat planning?
So the house as part of a larger habitation, where does the drainage go? Where does the greenery come from? Because if individuals choose to do house construction in their own way, there is no public common space left. There is no master plan in the place. So the habitat is house plus the living environment, the trees, the drainage, the play area for children, all that. That is what I meant by habitat.
Shalja, teacher, Kerala has been applauded both nationally as well as globally about the way it has responded to the COVID-19 crisis. And of course, the government has played a very big role in a lot of the relief efforts, like you have outlined earlier today. And I know there's a support with the community as well and a lot of community mobilization. So could you talk about what you see as the role of citizens in this work and as well as partnerships with the nonprofit sector?
The coordination, planning, and the human resource is the most important thing. In our hospitals, it is not sufficient to contain this virus. We want more human resource in our hospitals, but we cannot appoint all of a sudden a large number of people in hospitals. But at the time, we called for voluntary work and COVID brigade. We asked the people to register in the COVID brigade. Who is interested, they should have to register in the COVID brigade. Thousands of people registered in the COVID brigade, and we selected people from that list to work for the COVID purpose. Someone who registered is doctors and nurses, etc., and some of them are common people. And we planned to utilize the strength. And doctors and nurses we appointed in hospitals in a contract basis or for a short period. And also the other peoples we utilized in community kitchens and food supply, etc. And a large number of people worked hard in the COVID containing system. That is why we got the people's participation in a large scale. The joint activity, the collective activity, that is the most important thing. And also the correlation of all the stakeholders, the food supply department, the police and local self-government and revenue department. Under the leadership of district collectors, the revenue department coordinated all these things, and the health department coordinated all the health issues, etc. And the planning and collective activity is also the most important thing during this.
What I'm hearing from this conversation with both of you is that, you know, we can talk about resilience and we can talk about building back better, but we need to dismantle the existing nature of the relationship between the state and the citizen as one that isn't quite based on trust and is based on an unequal power dynamic. And we need to think of people-centered development, which Kerala has been one example of, where we think about the citizen front and center. And if we plan for that and we plan for well-being, and like Libby, you said, resilience is just one aspect of a broader concept of what it means to have well-being. That is what resilience means. And that kind of inclusive, sustained development is ultimately what will enable people to better respond and absorb the shocks of future disasters.
Thank you for listening to On the Contrary by IDR. I'm Rachita Vora, co-founder and director of IDR, an online journal that publishes cutting-edge ideas, lessons, and insights written by and for the people working on some of India's toughest problems. We believe that knowledge has the power to drive change, and our platform serves as a stage for underserved topics, unheard voices, and the counter-narratives that are crucial to achieving social progress. To learn more about the ideas featured on this podcast, as well as the latest thinking on social impact, visit our website, www.idronline.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. As always, thank you for listening.
On the Contrary is produced by Rachita Vora, Smarnita Shetty, and Shreya Adhikari. This episode was hosted by Rachita Vora. Production by Made in India.